Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and our program, Past Impressions. I'm Brent Topp, your host, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine. And in this program today, we are honored to have as our guest Dr. Susan Easton Black, Professor of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. Susan is a gifted teacher and noted author and historian, has written scores of books on church historical subjects, and has a particular love for Nauvoo. And so as we talk about Nauvoo on Past Impressions, our program where we study the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the people, places, events, and key issues associated with that church, today we are going to talk about the University of the City of Nauvoo. It is probably something that most of our listeners don't know an awful lot about, and we're so grateful, Susan, to have you here today to talk with us about this important period of church history.
Thank you, Brent. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, Susan, tell us about why the Latter-day Saints in Nauvoo desired to establish a university. It seems rather strange in somewhat frontier America in the 1840s to have a university. Tell us about what brought this about and why this is so significant in LDS church history.
As early as 1840 at a general conference, so that's where it all begins, a general conference, a man named John C. Bennett was appointed to a committee to draft a bill that would incorporate the city of Nauvoo. And he was appointed to be the delegate, actually, to urge the passage of such a bill through the legislature. The bill that will actually incorporate the city was called the Nauvoo Charter and was signed into law on 17th of December, 1840, by Governor Thomas Carlin. It's interesting, the Nauvoo Charter actually did three important things. One was to establish Nauvoo as a city. The second, to establish a legion for defending the city. And finally, to establish the first city university that would be the first city university in the state of Illinois.
Interesting. And that's amazing that charter gave that authority to the municipality to have those things. But within the theology of the LDS Church and education is so important. So it wasn't like this was the first school that we had. Tell us about Latter-day Saints' belief in education and the value and those things that set up for having a university in Nauvoo.
Thank you. If we were to trace back theology, we know that Joseph Smith was commanded by God to teach one another the doctrines of the kingdom. So as we look at Doctrine and Covenants, section 88, verse 78, Joseph was told to instruct more perfectly in theory and principle, in doctrine, in the law of the gospel, in all things that pertain unto the kingdom of God. So Joseph and his followers were commanded to learn both things in heaven as well as on the earth. So it starts early. You can see private schools being established in Kirtland to educate the children. We see not only in Ohio, but Missouri, home shops, barns were used for academic instructions. Names that come to the fore of teachers during that early period. Eliza R. Snow taught the basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Orson Hyde, he taught English. You get an M.C. Davis, he opens a singing school. So from Ohio to Kansas City to Independence to far west Missouri, you can find Latter-day Saints teaching, students attending. You can even find School of the Prophets for adult males. But you'd find for adults, Several of the adults that joined the church still struggled with the basics of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And it wasn't until you hit Illinois, where you get an organized structure that will bring in the adults as well as children in a learning situation within the church.
What was the norm in the 1840s, would you say, with regards to state-sponsored education? And so here we are providing them an opportunity both for children and for adults, but what is going on in areas outside of Nauvoo? What would it be like for other people in other places in education?
Well, for example, if we were to look strictly at the state of Illinois, you could look at the time and you'd say 1 in 6 children were given an opportunity for any kind of education. And what it was viewed was that children were the workforce, and to attend school meant that they had idle time. And so parents weren't actually willing to send their children off to be taught even the basics because they viewed them as so needed around mm-hmm. the home, the farm.
Mm-hmm. So now we come to Nauvoo, and the charter gives them the authority to establish a city university of Nauvoo. And we've talked a little bit about the value within our religious beliefs of education and seeking after the intelligence, which is light and truth. Why don't we talk about the actual University of Nauvoo and tell us about some of the administrators and the people that were involved with this enterprise, and tell us about what they did and so forth.
Okay, this university structure was different than we view universities today, which typically are educating adults. The university structure of Nauvoo actually had an adult component, secondary education, as well as elementary. Mm-hmm. So it covered all levels as to kind of key players where you'd say involved in it. The University of the City of Nauvoo was very administrative heavy. In fact, we can name 77 officials where you could look, say, at a typical school and you'd say, well, there's one principal and, and here are the teachers. But they actually had a chancellor, they had a registrar, they had a board of regents consisting of 23 people. So you get, as your first chancellor, is this John C. Bennett. William Law is the registrar. And among the 23 men that are called to the Board of Regents, you've got Joseph Smith, Sidney Rigdon, Hiram Smith, Daniel H. Wells, Newell K. Whitney, people that are often talked about in church history for other responsibilities.
Interesting. 77 administrators.
77. You eventually get wardens. You get the certificate people trying to okay teachers. So you've got very, very high administrative component.
Interesting. Today on Past Impressions, we're speaking with Professor Susan Black from Brigham Young University, Professor of Church History and Doctrine. Susan, you've explained to us about the Nauvoo Charter and the establishment of the University of Nauvoo, and you identified that it had three components to it, adults and secondary and then primary education for children as well. Why don't you describe for us what goes on in each of those areas and what is happening in Nauvoo with the University of Nauvoo?
All right. I'll start first, Brent, with the university level, where we think typical university adults. Classes were held at first in loosely knit campus, where you'd say there's an upper campus and a lower campus, but there were no specific buildings. Mm-hmm. So you'd say they're held in homes, they're held in barns, they're held in shops, classes would be. But eventually, as you get the structures of the concert hall and even the Nauvoo Temple, the 70s hall, classes were held on that. And they always said we have a lower campus, which is down on the flats.
Okay.
And then we have the upper campus, which is more where you see the business district today in Nauvoo. Serving as professors, you have Orson Spencer that mm-hmm. becomes pretty important out west.
That's right.
And you get a Sidney Rigdon. Gustavus Hills is a music man, but no one at the kind of adult level part of the university had a bigger impact than Orson Pratt. Mm. I thought I'd share with you a list of his courses which I know I'd choke through. But he actually taught students algebra, trigonometry, geometry, surveying, navigation, various parts of calculus. He presented lectures on astronomy, chemistry, foreign language, and philosophy.
Wow.
So you'd
Those
look
are
at the
university
man.
Courses, yeah.
They are. Sidney Rigdon did mostly English literature. Well, you begin to look. You might find it interesting that the professors received a modest salary. And what they received from their classes actually came from the land taxes on homes there in Nauvoo, much like you'd see state university. But it was anticipated that as a result, they received 50 cents to $1 for each course they taught. Then if you were to look, well, what about these classes? Did they matriculate the students through freshman, sophomore kind of thing? They actually never put in place a type of curriculum that led towards graduation. And so you could never say you graduated from the University of Nauvoo, but they did award honorary master's degrees. And one of the men, I think it's pretty interesting, that received an honorary law degree, you know, from the University of Nauvoo was John Wentworth. Think of the letter sent to him that included the Articles of Faith. He actually was one of our great recipients and one of the very few to receive such a prestigious degree. At one point, they formed a committee to raise subscriptions to construct these multiple university buildings. And by 1845, they indicated they had enough money to do so. Hmm. But at the very time, it's a time that they're starting to face mobs, and any building for seniors, adults, never did happen on that university structure.
Interesting. Well, what about for the ages 14 through 18, what we might call our seminary or ages or our high school ages, the young men, young women? What was going on in their educational pursuits in Nauvoo?
Well, they actually did have the secondary level, and interesting, they called it seminary.
Interesting.
The beginning, your main teachers there are a man named Joseph Cole and his sister Adelia. They did build a building that was a seminary building. And I always thought, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? It was reconstructed with all our other seminary buildings. But it was located one block northeast of the Nauvoo Temple on Wells Street. And for them, the curriculum, they actually used a curriculum that was popular in New England secondary schools. And for these kind of more teenage type, they were taught Latin, Greek, English, grammar, writing, mathematics, bookkeeping, geography. But it's interesting, attendance at the secondary schools, attendance, we don't have any records. So we don't have records of faculty other than just a handful of secondary teachers, nor do we have who are the students that attended those secondary schools. But we know the building was in place, and we actually know what was taught.
Now, Susan, you know the records of Nauvoo probably as well as anyone. Do we have many contemporary accounts of either adults or the teenagers going to school? Do they ever refer to it in their journals or things like that?
Right. The adults refer to the attendance at the university level adult. Mm-hmm. We can't find teenagers at this point that are writing about secondary. But actually, when we come down to the elementary, we can name all the teachers, and we can almost name 1,500 students.
Wow. Well, why do you think the difference there? I mean, why is there such a dearth of information about that seminary age group?
Well, I think at the seminary level, it does not appear that you got paid by the attendance of your students.
Okay.
But at the elementary level, the teachers had to write, here's the name of the student, and they put a P for present and an A for absent each day that they attended. And that determined the wage of the teacher. So the teacher was motivated to keep the records. And then you get the Latter-day Saints actually carried those records west.
Interesting. You're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Today we're talking about the University of the City of Nauvoo with Professor Susan Easton Black. And Susan, we talked a little bit about the university level, the adults. We've talked a little bit about how little we know about the seminary levels, grades 9 through 12 that we would have. And so that leads us now to the primary education, or what is called the common school. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the education of children in Nauvoo?
Okay, the education of children was free. And it didn't matter which church you attended, whether LDS or another church in the area. So free public schooling was provided through the common schools from first to eighth grade. And actually, each ward within Nauvoo built a schoolhouse. And so you've got a specific place that children would be going.
Was it arranged geographically according to the wards then?
Right. Okay. So wards were a political division at first in town. And so it was a geographic where you lived, you attended school number one, number two, and so forth.
So when we go to Nauvoo today and we go to the Pendleton Schoolhouse, would that be representative of a ward school then?
Well, Pendleton, that schoolhouse would represent a private school, and we'll talk about those, kind of like our charter private schools today. But the schoolhouse was actually a pretty substantial building.
Okay.
We can name 35 teachers, and it's interesting. None of the teachers that we can find received a kind of formal education, but each of them had to pass a competency exam and receive a teaching certificate. And we have some of those certificates have survived that we have today. But basically, if you could pass the certificate and show proficiency in teaching, you were guaranteed employment in Nauvoo. And it's interesting, for a teacher to get that certificate, she had to receive the approval of two local trustees, three wardens, two examiners, two inspectors, and the 23 members of the Board of Regents.
Wow, that is impressive.
I'm not sure all of us could pass that. But for the students who attended classes then at the kind of common school, they were taught Greek, Latin, Spanish, and French.
Interesting.
You could tell the church was going to move out beyond our borders, and as well as the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic. And it's interesting, they had prescribed textbooks. But if you look over the textbook, the one subject missing was in the elementary school, they never taught history.
Why? That is very, very fascinating.
So, board members, the reason they concluded no teaching of history, even though Spanish and French were offered, the reason for no teaching of history is they actually believe that history immortalized the worst men and failed to recognize the praiseworthy, and thus history was omitted
from
the curriculum.
So just the whole curriculum, you didn't deal with history at all? Or?
No, can you imagine? Okay, so if you looked, you can imagine soon there are too many children for the number of school buildings, and you go back to the home barn shop kind of holding schools. As far as what was inside, you had backless benches, you had writing tables, a teacher's desk, a fireplace or stove, and depending on the weather, you either wanted to be close or far away from that. And you'd say anything like a map or a globe or a chart was uncommon, and most of the students were expected to memorize. So whether it's memorize spelling, memorize long lists, and to keep students interested, if you kind of matriculated from grade to grade, students received a paper certificate. This became really a prized possession, even
to,
as
to have the certificate that you'd completed this curriculum minus history.
Right.
And I want to go back. Something that just triggered in my mind as you talk about the teachers that were hired, I guess you would say, that had to demonstrate their competency as teachers and their mastery of certain subjects. Well, was it the Board of Regents, those 77 administrators, that determined that competency, or was there something that would be more what we might say state board certified or something like that? Was it totally local?
It's totally local. In other words, if you were to look at certification requirements for even teaching these young children much higher than you'd ever find on a state level.
Really?
In other words, they wanted incredible teaching. But what you find, you realize, like today, some parents like to send their children to a public education that is free, mm-hmm. but others actually prefer the private teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So private teachers, they received no city money. And so they needed to actually advertise themselves. And they often held a school in their homes. And some had a musical talent. Others had other talents. But they had no one certifying how good they were mm-hmm. on any given subject. But it's amazing. We had as many private teachers in Nauvoo as we had common school teacher. And a private teacher could be considered someone teaching music.
Mm-hmm. Susan, we've talked about all the different levels, the adults, the primary, or the seminary age kids is what they called it, and the primary education. We've talked about what it took to become a teacher in the school system in Nauvoo. And it caused me to wonder, how would the Nauvoo school system be different than other schools in Hancock County or in Adams County in Iowa? What would be different about Nauvoo education and elsewhere?
The difference between Nauvoo and, say, the county that Nauvoo was a part of, or even looking over through the state of Illinois, Nauvoo was organized.
Okay.
And Nauvoo had requirements. You'd say other places kind of remind me of our days in Kirtland or even in Missouri, where some person would start a school and then another, and then it would last a few days. Actually, mm-hmm. most of the schools just went through the winter months, and sometimes not even that. So you look at Nauvoo, and what you really see is a great desire on the part of Latter-day Saints to educate themselves. And obviously, they did a good job. I mm-hmm. mean, years later, yeah. every man of the battalion could sign his name, you know, find another unit that could do that.
That's right.
So it not only blessed the lives of the adults, but it blessed the next generation growing up that would just have opportunities open to them that, say, their contemporaries in Hancock County would never have.
And you know, and I think it stems back to those theological principles and the revelations that I think that we see even today, the importance of education to Latter-day Saints is more than practical. It's truly religious. I was also fascinated as you talked about the men and women teachers, and why don't we talk a little bit about what we might call today gender equity? Were they paid the same, and were there predominantly women teachers versus men teachers? Tell us a little bit about the differences between men and women as the teachers.
You can't find a woman at the University of Nauvoo that's teaching adults.
Interesting.
Where you'd say, not even Eliza R. Snow. She's got children of, you know, prophets and leaders of the church, but she's not teaching adult courses. What you do find is that there are many more women teaching at the elementary level than men. And there could be several reasons. One, they're competent.
Yeah.
You know, okay,
uh-huh.
you could go for that. But the bottom line goes like this. If you hired a woman, she could receive half to two-thirds the salary of a male teacher. And so there was not equity.
Now, in our 21st century sensitivities, we would say, oh, that is terribly unfair. That's awful. That shouldn't have been. Was that pretty common of the day, though? Was
That is very common of the day. In other words, the typical man could be a farmer. He could earn $2 a day
mm-hmm.
During the time period. And for a woman, you know, she might make money. They had a straw hat association in Nauvoo, and she might make money doing that. But actually, it was considered, although less than a man, it was a pretty good wage for a woman at the time.
So it wasn't what we would call today discriminatory. It was just a pervasive culture that's the way it was.
It was just the culture
yeah.
how it was.
Well, how were they paid?
They are actually paid in cash.
Okay.
And just like at the university level for professors, their money was received from the taxes on land, and then the individual teacher made money by the number of students he or she had and their attendance. Did they come every day? So when a child was sick, if you're a teacher, you would not only worry for the child, but perhaps could you pay your bills that much?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad we don't do that today at BYU.
Oh, or so much.
Susan would be paid a lot because she has lots of students and everybody wants to be in your classes. So,
thanks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about as Nauvoo is coming to an end. You mentioned that they had raised money or had were going to build buildings, but then with the persecution and the upcoming exodus. But what do we learn now about education for the saints stemming from Nauvoo that reaches out westward and follows Brigham Young to the west? So what is the legacy, I guess you would say, of the University of the City of Nauvoo?
Well, obviously, the legacy, eventually you get BYU, University of Deseret. I think the part that was the most disappointing in my study, I decided to follow each of the people to see if they chose to follow Brigham Young out west. In other words, you're more educated, at least the ones that we could name by name. I was disappointed to find that out of those 70-plus administrators, only 56 went west. Out of the common school teachers, which were in the 30, 58% went west. Out of private school teachers, almost their same number, 45% went west. Out of almost 1,500 students, only 36% went west.
Huh.
So what it says is you have to be wise with your education.
Yeah.
You know, truth must edify. So despite the fact that even children could speak, you need to make sure that whatever education you get, that it serves you well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty serious about that. Truth must edify.
Right.
And the teacher just can't be talking and the person not internalize. And that teacher needs to know who they are, where they're going. And with teaching, you're taking students on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And if that journey isn't leading you to somewhere wonderful, such as choosing to follow a prophet, you're in trouble.
Now, wouldn't you say, though, there were lots of other issues involved besides just education? It wasn't like that they were just getting smarter and decided not to go. When you mentioned some of the administrators, we talk about John C. Bennett and William Law and
Sidney Rigdon coming in.
We have lots of other issues going on there.
Lots of voices.
And so those children, when we speak of those children, the percentage, those are attached to those families that are coming to oppose the prophet Joseph Smith later on because of other issues as well. So, one of the things that I find fascinating about education and in light of what you just shared with us is that it's very strong today that Latter-day Saints, the more educated they become, the more faithful they become, not the other way around.
Right. You do see that statistic. And, I think it's a message for me in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a message maybe for all teachers that that truth does edify and that we have a responsibility.
Yeah.
As we teach, we mold.
Yeah. And, President Kimball used to use that term education for eternity. And I think as Latter-day Saints, we've talked about the theological implications of it, that whatever degree of intelligence we attain unto in this life will rise with us in the resurrection. We recognize that education is not just to help me to become a better person in mortality or to earn a better living, but it is actually something that's going to go with me and help me through all eternity. We're grateful for you today, Susan, to share with us about the educational system of Nauvoo. We hope that our listeners will join us again in the future for other programs on past impressions where we study the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so we hope that you will join us again in the future on the Mormon Channel. And thank you, Sister Black, for educating us about education.
Thank you. It's been a delight to be here.